Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Sunday, January the 27th. As we like to do on Sundays, we'll be chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Lots to get into today, the politics of the shutdown, where does it go from here? I think one of the big stories of the next 18 months is an independent running for president. There are now some names, some people who I think could have a huge impact in 2020. The Covington High School kids, we got into it a little bit last week. We know a lot more this week, so we'll get into this hatred from the left, which is really vicious, against these young people. Bill had an interesting story that I'd like to develop with him a little bit today, and that's what happened with Melania Trump and this British newspaper. I mean, they're actually paying her money because they admit that they made a mistake or printed something incorrect. That's just absolutely fascinating. Secretary Pompeo, I think, is doing exactly the right thing with respect to Venezuela. I like Pompeo more all the time. I think he's turning out to be a great Secretary of State. Here in Texas, we have a big story, which I think is only going to get bigger because it'll probably go to other states as well. And that's this whole question of illegal votes, not necessarily illegal immigrants, but people in the country who are not citizens. And the number is 58,000, according to the Attorney General. Some people are questioning that number. I don't know, but that's a lot of people, a huge lot of people. And an arrest was made by the Mueller investigation. This fellow named Stone was arrested. I thought the arrest itself was a bit of overkill, sending in all these guys with machine guns. I thought it was a bit of overkill. But again, I don't like to second guess the FBI too much. But let me say hello to our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, give us a quick weather report.
It's actually very nice in New York. It was, for winter, a moderate day, I think in the 40s, warm enough to get my car washed, which was definitely needed, and to go get a bag of popcorn at Bed Bath & Beyond, so it was a good day. Other than that, the news from New York over the week was actually quite bleak, because the governor of New York, who is completely crazy and totally soulless, signed into law an abortion bill,
yes,
that permits abortion up until the time of birth. I can understand both sides in the abortion debate, but that is so far over the top. Who is he trying to appeal to? And this is a man who professes to be a Catholic. Now, I don't go into people's religious beliefs, and I know that most people will say, well, my private beliefs are one thing, my public beliefs are something else. But for goodness sake, there's a point where a person has to say, there must be a moral limit, and he just doesn't seem to know where that moral limit is.
Right.
Bad day. Yeah.
Yeah, and this law is something that I mean, aside from the sheer inhumanity of it, is barbaric to think of an abortion that late in a pregnancy. But this is the one time, Bill, where I keep looking for a Democrat. And we'll talk about Democrats later, but I keep looking for a Democrat running for president who says, you know what, yes, I believe in Roe v. Wade, but I don't believe in this, and I'm going to veto this because this is too much. And it seems like that's what's lacking among the Democrats. There isn't a Democrat who says, okay, abortion in the first 12 weeks, I can buy that. Or, it's one thing, but this is not abortion. This is something else. And that's what continues to disappoint me about these liberals, that it seems like they're just trying to out-liberal each other, and
that's right.
I think Cuomo was doing here. He was sending a message to the whole world saying, hey, nobody's more liberal than I am. Look what I'm going to sign.
I don't know,
Bill. That's pretty obscene, I think.
I think it's obscene. I think it's murder. I mean, that's what it is. And yet, not only do I criticize the liberals, this isn't liberalism anymore, this is craziness, I also criticize the Republicans. There isn't even a Republican Party in New York State. I mean, mm-hmm. nobody spoke out. They don't seem interested in anything. I mean, the idea that you can have a governor get away with this without any real opposition, the National Republican Party was indifferent. You know, for years, the Republican Party has sat around and watched this country be handed over to extreme leftists, the educational system. I put a lot of blame on the Republican Party for inactivity. The mm-hmm. you know, Trump, of course, Reagan was a real Republican. He actually took action. He actually had a point of view. Trump, whether you like him or not, has a point of view. He is willing to fight for his beliefs. But the Republican Party generally doesn't seem to care much about anything. And I'm appalled by it. We were able to elect in New York in the 1990s a great Republican mayor named Rudy Giuliani, who's a tough mm-hmm. guy, but he got a great deal done. But ever since that, the attitude seems to be, we're perfectly happy to lose as long as you give us a couple of judgeships. It's the old country club Republicans. I mean, who cares if you win or lose? And it's back to the old days. We have a mayor in New York who's a Marxist, who is pursuing Marxist programs. Nobody cares. It's just awful here.
Right. Well, that's right. And I think in this particular law that Governor Cuomo signed, this could come back to haunt the Democrats in one way, Bill. If a state is now able to write a state law saying that abortion can happen at any moment, why couldn't Texas say that an abortion cannot happen after 12 weeks? So that's, if there is a silver lining to this. I hate to speak that way about abortion, but if there, you know, it seems to me that if the argument is, well, the state of New York can guarantee a woman an abortion, well, then Texas can go the other way, Bill.
That's right. Well, unless the Democrats take power in Washington and pack the court system with leftist judges that will find some technical federal reason why they can't. I mean, we are in a very frightening era. The country is hanging mm-hmm. really on a knife edge. President Trump has nominated, and fortunately the Senate has confirmed a number of judges, but that can mm-hmm. go in the other direction. And I really do fear that 2020 is going to be an ugly year in American politics. I really do. But the inability of the Republican Party to even come up with a coherent position on things like this is very discouraging.
Well, I was talking to my friend Barry Castleman yesterday, and he really believes that the Republicans gave away 2018 by not having done something about Obamacare. You know, it's one thing to say, we don't like Obamacare, we're going to repeal it, but then when you have a chance you don't do it, that's how you lose elections, Bill. So I blame the Republicans quite a bit for 2018, particularly in the House, where, they never had a message.
They had Paul Ryan. That was the problem. I mean, a fine man,
wonderful man.
But he didn't seem to have his heart in his work. There seemed to be, one of the things that was admirable about Reagan. I know people who didn't vote for Reagan, but he said, "I admire the man. At least he has a point of view, and he fights for it, and you know what mm-hmm. he stands for." You don't even know what the Republicans in the House stood for. There are some terrific Republicans in the House, but now you have Democratic control. And within a few weeks, it became frightening. I mean, they put this crazy woman from Minnesota on the Foreign Affairs Committee, which not only, this is the Muslim woman who now we find out had intervened in a court case involving people who wanted to join ISIS, intervened on their behalf. Not only is it a position you don't give to somebody like that, but she will have access to classified information. And I am frightened as to what she will do with it. This is really bad stuff.
Yes, and this lady is something else, too. It's hard to believe that anybody like that could be elected. I'm assuming her district must be majority Muslim. Is that it?
It's a very heavily Somali district. And it's a combination of Somalis and idiotic American liberals, who think this is probably a wonderful thing. I mean, the Minneapolis Star Tribune, which is now an online newspaper, which is a real liberal paper, thinks their handling of her has been wonderful. They give her all this praise. I mean, she's a Muslim woman, and then she's a refugee. All the little labels. But ultimately what she is she is somebody who does not have the interests of this country at heart. And it is a dangerous, dangerous situation.
That's right. Well, let's talk a little bit about the politics of the shutdown, Bill, because President Trump decided to, reopen the government on Friday. He punted on this issue. I'm not sure. I was thinking a lot about it and thinking, actually, it may have been a smart move by President Trump because he took away the issue from the Democrats. The Democrats can now not say, well, you know, gee, you know, we're fighting for these workers who aren't getting their paychecks. You know, now the issue is they have to put something on the table. And the sense that I'm getting from what I'm reading between the lines is that in 3 weeks, if President Trump does not get the funds, he's going to just go his own way, which, according to Marco Rubio, an emergency is not a good idea. But apparently there are alternatives to the emergency. There are other ways of building the wall without having to declare a national emergency. So it's going to be interesting by the end of February, Bill.
It will be interesting. Somebody said, and I don't recall who it was, I think it was a member of Congress, President Obama found billions of dollars to give to Iran as part of the Iran nuclear deal without any authorization from Congress. And that seemed to be okay for certain people. He can probably find money for the wall. Look, he hasn't been all that coherent in doing it. And once again, we have a problem that could be a fatal problem for this country's existence. And that is we have a press that is so corrupt and so dishonest that it has reached the point now where we have a press crisis in America, but the only people who can report on it are the very people who are creating it. And this is dangerous stuff. We have always, at least in our generation and in two or three prior generations, had a press that at least aspired to a kind of neutrality, even when they didn't achieve it. Today we have a press where there isn't even a pretension. CNN is an anti-Trump network. You know, somebody said this week, I believe, that if President Trump should drop dead, CNN would be off the air in 3 weeks because he's their only reason to exist. I think that's true. They don't explain the issues very well. They don't care.
No, and they're so dramatic. I mean, they happen to be, by coincidence, they happen to be at the home of Roger Stone, which I find that incredible. By coincidence, they were there. Somebody had to leak it.
Well, once again, the Republican Party drops the ball. They should demand a complete investigation of who leaked this to a news organization. This is outrageous. The raid itself was outrageous. In a case like this, you call the person's lawyer and say, have him present himself to the DA's or to the U.S. Attorney's Office. Mm-hmm. On such and such a time, you don't raid his home with guns. This man isn't dangerous. And then for somebody to alert CNN and only CNN, this should be a major investigation. But they're asleep. You know, they're just asleep at the switch.
Well, CNN, their explanation is that apparently somebody noticed some action somewhere, and by coincidence, their reporter just happened to be at Roger Stone's home.
Yeah,
that's a pretty outrageous explanation.
Well, of course, they're reporters and their TV crews with the cameras and everything. They were cruising in the neighborhood, and somebody said, "Oh, you know, we think there's some activity." Oh, with Roger Stone's home. Well, yes, we can gather together some equipment. I mean, it's so obviously ridiculous. It's like the explanation they gave last week for this outrageous news report that even Mueller's office had to disown about certain things happening or certain things that had happened, when it was revealed by the special counsel's office that the news reports on it were false, and the specifics escape me at the moment. Some of the networks justified the report by saying, "Well, we said in our report that if it were true, it would be a disaster for the president." I mean, what kind of an excuse is that? You're supposed to find out if it's true before you go on the air. Not to say if it's true. I mean, isn't it terrible? The idea of going out ruining people's reputations and saying it's justified if we can say before the report, if true, that's outrageous. The press has become outrageous. It has become, in my view, a danger to the country.
Right. Well, this raid at Stone's house, I have no idea what he did or didn't do. But I thought the idea, he was by himself. himself, I think, at home. I don't know if his wife was there or whatever, but he's, I mean, this is not a dangerous man. Then to show up with all these guns, like, you know, they were raiding El Chapo or they were raiding somebody. I felt it was overkill. And somebody up the ladder had to approve that. I wonder if it was the FBI director or Mr. Mueller or the attorney. I mean, somebody had to approve something as outrageous as that, Bill.
Well, somebody approved it. Yeah, somebody approved the style of the raid. And it does frighten me because if this is what's in Mueller's mind, then he's going to come down hard on Trump, whether it's true or not. You know, it doesn't have to be true. All he has to do is you know, indict him or charge him. By the time the truth gets out, he'll be out of office. And I think they're going after him. What Trump's crime is he got elected. Trump's crime is the same crime that Richard Nixon committed. And I was no fan of Richard Nixon. He was, you know, he was tricky dick to me. But I'm not at all sure that Watergate was really the reason why he had to leave office. I think that was the proximate reason. And unfortunately, in his blundering and his paranoia, he gave them the reason because of some of his actions. But he was pushed out of office because he was Richard Nixon. They didn't like him. The fact that he carried 49 states was outrageous to the establishment. How dare you vote for someone we disapprove of? And I think that's what you're seeing here. And we have reached a frightening point in American life where this kind of thing can happen.
Well, there's an interesting story regarding President Trump or the First Lady. And I was not familiar with this story, but apparently... Wait one second. Oops. I thought I needed to take a quick break, but I don't. But apparently there was a story. There was a story about the First Lady in a British newspaper that they've taken back. Telegraph. And then they've taken it back, and they're even making a payment, I guess. It must have been a pretty bad story. I don't remember the story, Bill. Do you remember the story and what it said?
It was a story. It was actually an excerpt they ran from a book by a very bad American journalist named Nina Burley, who was a kind of a front operator for Arab causes in America and all the other stuff. And it was just a smear job. I mean, she made comments that, he rescued her from a failing modeling career and she left school because she failed an exam. None of it turned out to be true. And they conceded in the report that after checking it, none of it was true. So they made a deal with her. The report only ran, by the way, about a week ago. And I admire the British system in the sense that they were able to settle this so quickly. In this country, it's almost impossible to sue a newspaper. So they sued the newspaper. They got a large amount of money. I think it is absolutely remarkable that no journalist excuse me, I've got a cold, that no journalist has asked the White House, what's she going to do with the money? In fact, the journalists don't even seem interested in the story. You know, because they understand what it says about their own profession. So the story is being carried basically by an alternative press. But this is I've never seen this happen, where a first lady sued a newspaper and won so quickly, and apparently she is going after other newspapers. And the mainstream media,
I'm glad to hear that.
The mainstream media just does not seem interested. But I like her. I like the fact that she fights back and that she fights back and wins. My feeling has been that it is much too hard in this country to sue a news organization. I think it should be much easier. They will make them into more honest organizations and more careful organizations.
Absolutely.
But we haven't reached that point.
Yeah, and I had not read that story about the First Lady, so I'm glad you wrote about this today. But I like to see more politicians do this because, first of all, what's amazing about this story is let's assume that it's true. Let's assume that Donald Trump rescued her from a failing modeling career or whatever. So what does that have to do with him? I don't understand. Mm. I mean, is she the first woman or the first woman in history? I mean, to have failed in a business? I mean, I don't know. I just find a story like that about a first lady to be totally irrelevant. It doesn't matter to me that she failed a modeling business. Does it to you, Bill? I don't know. It doesn't bother me.
It doesn't even interest me. I mean,
well, that's
I think,
it. That's my
the
point.
Only thing that the only thing that interests me is her work as First Lady, which is wonderful. But of course,
right.
she does not get anywhere near the credit that Michelle Obama got. I mean, and you'll notice that even though she's a model, that she's beautiful, that
mm-hmm.
she's elegant, she has never been on a cover of a women's magazine since Trump became president. And the reason, of course, is that that whole industry is so left-wing that they
mm-hmm.
know that any editor who puts her on the cover will be ostracized by the other editors here in New York.
Right.
It's an absolute disgrace.
Yeah, speaking of the media, there was a very interesting thing. We got into it a little bit last week, and this is the high school students from Kentucky who went to, I guess it was Washington, D.C., for the March for Life and had that encounter with a Native American gentleman who now turns out that his Vietnam career is not exactly the way he had represented it, but that's something
no.
else. But the lawyer representing these families was on TV the other day and basically said, we're giving everybody 48 hours to apologize. If they don't apologize, they're going to be part of a suit, of a lawsuit. And I would love to see these kids succeed. And I have to believe that there's thousands of parents, from both sides, really, politically, who saw what they saw and would like to see these kids succeed in this lawsuit, because this was the media, Bill, at its worst. I mean, this is about as bad as it gets, Bill.
That's a warning. Yes. This is, these were people who were out of control. The story was run before it was checked, which is very common, especially in the era of Trump. The White House correspondent for the New York Times, Maggie Haberman, tweeted that these kids should be punished. Maggie Haberman should be fired. First of all, she should be fired for appearing on CNN. I have absolutely no idea why the New York Times allows that, except for the fact that Times has become part of the problem. You wonder what else isn't true. When you see these stories, when you see these constant press failures, you wonder what else is being reported that is false. And you know that the press is now in cahoots with the special prosecutor. It is a branch of the Democratic Party. You have, by the way, this congresswoman from Minnesota, this really weird lady who apparently married her brother to get into the United States. This is a woman who just got a $250,000 book contract. Now, why would anybody pay $250,000 for a book about her? I mean, where did this money come from? Apparently, the publishing house that's paying it is a very small publishing house. You wonder where they would come up with $250,000. And you have to suspect, again, I don't have the proof, I'm not making the charge, but you have to suspect that this money is being supplied from somewhere. And nobody has any questions. Nobody has any questions.
Right. Well, I thought the whole incident with the high school kids was so outrageous. Now the latest, the latest thing from the left is that if you're wearing a red, Make America Great Again sign or hat, that makes you a racist now. I mean, this is outrageous.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just totally outrageous. People are saying you're not supposed to wear that anywhere in public. Well, where does this stop? What if I said that we shouldn't wear a Che Guevara T-shirt in public because it offends me? Where does it stop? I mean, look,
well,
I get offended every time I see one of those Che T-shirts, but I'm also, I stand back for a second and say it's a free country. He can do it. I don't have to look at it, Bill.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, people are free to do it. But, Don Lemon was on the air, who's become a complete maniac. Was on the air saying, these hats are triggering to certain people. Well, so they're triggering to certain people. That's called the heckler's veto. In other words, you shouldn't wear the hat because other people, as you just pointed out, are offended by it. Well, under that logic, you have no freedom of speech. And I'm afraid that that's the direction we're going at in this country. I've always felt that we're not going to lose our freedoms in this country. No one's going to take them away. We are going to give them up. Not we. We, too. We wouldn't do it. But the young generation will be convinced to just give up their freedom, saying, wouldn't it be better to live in a country where freedom of speech meant freedom of friendly speech? And that's where the trouble begins. Speech by its – we were taught, in my generation, that free speech by its nature was offensive. that we didn't need a First Amendment to protect popular speech. You know, as we used to say, nobody in history ever went to prison for agreeing with his government.
Right.
Now we're being told that free speech must not be offensive because people will be offended, and especially if they are, quote, marginalized people, which I think is itself a demeaning term. To say, well, you have to be careful because these are marginalized people. You know, you're marginalized if you want to be marginalized.
I
see college students who are getting full scholarships to Ivy League schools referring to themselves as marginalized. And I think of my immigrant grandparents who would give anything to live the lives of these kids. Anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and yours, I'm sure, also.
Yes, the other day I was listening to a lady, I don't remember the lady's name, she's an African-American lady, very successful professor, and she was being interviewed about all of this, and she said, you know, nobody taught me, or my parents never taught me, that I was supposed to fail because I was black, or
yes.
that I was supposed to be, you know, in other words, they said, hey, you know, you get out there and you compete, and you be the best you can be, and, you know, if somebody doesn't like your skin color, that's their problem, but you're going to succeed. And that attitude, I wish there was more of that in the black community, because I think they're a lot of this victimization is killing them. I really do. I think it's hurting them. I just don't think it's good for the country. I also think all this racism stuff is poison in the
yes.
country, because nobody talks to each other, Bill. It's like, you know, nobody wants to talk to each other because everybody's afraid of offending someone, Bill.
Well, that's exactly right. You know, it's very much like the situation you hear that's going on in corporations, that many
mm-hmm.
men will not be in an office alone with a woman. They will not have lunch with a woman unless there are other
mm-hmm.
people present. And who is this hurting? It's hurting women.
That's right.
Women who may not have opportunities because of their own so-called movement, which is usually about lawyers and legal fees. And what it's done to them. You're quite right about victimhood. I mean, if you convince yourself you're a victim, you're going to be a victim all your life.
That's right.
My wife, who is a college teacher, told me recently about an African-American student who approached her. They had a discussion about some related field, and he said, why do I have to be a minority? And I thought that was such a wonderful question. You know,
mm-hmm.
and if more and more kids in the black community would take that point of view and say, I'm not a minority, I'm an American. I think it would be a wonderful thing. I hope it happens. You know, one of the things we should talk about is the fact that I'm sure you've noticed recently, at least before the last week or so when things seem to have gone very awry, but that President Trump's standing among Hispanics has risen dramatically.
In that one poll,
I think that poll is probably pretty accurate. And I think for reasons that you pointed out in some of the shows, and that is that there's a whole new generation of entrepreneurial people in the Hispanic community
yes.
who don't go along with this victim business.
Oh, I agree. And I think it's also true of young blacks. I mean, there was a young
yes.
black, one of the kids in Covington was black. And
yes.
he was being yelled obscenities almost as if they were calling him a traitor for
yes.
being part of that for being part of that group. Bill, let me take a little break.
Sure.
When we come back, we'll continue our chat with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, very quickly, on this day in history, 1967, Apollo 1 had that terrible fire,
yes.
killing the three men. What I find fascinating about that, Bill, is how quickly Apollo or NASA recovered. I mean, 2 years later, we were landing on the moon.
That's right.
An amazing recovery, and that speaks volumes, I think, about the quality of the men that they had on the bench who could step up and continue the program, Bill.
Well, it was an amazing era, and it was an amazing era because we thought it was amazing. I mean, people, every time there was a moon flight, a space flight, the country was really enraptured by it. I remember,
yes,
of course, being a New Yorker, you could go to Grand Central Station, and they had a screen that must have been about 40 feet wide, and people would look up at the screen and watch the flight from Grand Central
mm-hmm.
Station. And we were part of a country. It was all ruined by Barack Obama, who said to the head of NASA that your main objective is Muslim outreach. I mean, I don't think so. Now, President Trump is trying to bring back the program, but again, no coverage, no interest. Who cares? There was a poll taken among young people last year and things that were important to them. And what was shocking about the poll was it showed almost no interest in scientific research or scientific development. Everything was about, quote, social justice. These kids
mm-hmm.
don't realize that social justice in part comes from developing an economy and technology that helps people. And
right.
That's part of it. But that's not what they're being taught in school.
Well, I'm almost to the point where I think we should declare many universities a national security risk. Because what we're teaching some of these young people, and not every university, I want to make sure that's clear, not every professor, obviously, but too many of them, where we're teaching them all the wrong lessons about the United States. And it seems like we only highlight the bad things. We just exaggerate all the bad things and don't talk about all the good things. And I'm not saying that it should be a rosy history. No, you got to tell the... You got to talk about slavery, that's fine, but you also have to talk about the fact that look at all the progress we've made, and that apparently gets overlooked in all of the stuff being taught. Some of these young people today, when you listen to them, you're really startled by how ignorant they are. I mean, I just heard Kamala, she's not a young person, but I mean, Kamala Harris is running for president, and her message is, Medicare for all and the biggest middle-class tax cut in the history of the country, and we're going to pay for everything by eliminating the Trump tax cut for the rich.
Yes.
I mean, come on. Who believes that garbage?
That's a scam, yeah.
It is.
It's a complete scam. And you're right. I mean, who will believe it? Well, if she gets the nomination, the press will believe it because that's what they'll be told to believe. I mean, the people at CNN will be basically her campaign staff,
mm-hmm.
and they will be told she is our candidate, and that's it. And this is an extension of what was called the new journalism in the 1960s, where they said that the real purpose of journalism was not to report the news, but to better society, the higher
mm-hmm.
value. We have a higher value as to what the word truth means. And what we saw that higher value do was to basically... deplete the country. I mean, we still have not in this country settled the issue of how we lost the Vietnam War, having won every battle. You know,
right.
that never happened before, but nobody seems to care.
Right,
you know,
and ironically,
Go ahead.
No, I was
going
to say, ironically, today is the anniversary of the 45th anniversary of the Vietnam Peace Agreement, where we
yes.
actually won the war. But unfortunately lost the peace, as they say. But it was 45 years ago that President or Secretary of State Kissinger signed the agreement to end the war. And, you know, 2 years later, we lost Vietnam, which is pretty incredible to me, Bill.
It is. And what is interesting also, and again, never discussed by the press, is all those anti-war phonies who talked about, all we are saying is give peace a chance, when the war did end, with the gross violation of the peace agreement by the North and its invasion of South Vietnam, Vietnam became a country with no human rights of any kind,
mm-hmm.
and they never batted an eyelash.
That's right. And look, what was it, 3 million people who were killed in that region?
Right,
after
well, yes,
that,
in Cambodia.
In Cambodia and all of that, and that they forgot all about that. They were into something else, and they forgot... all of that, with one exception. I got to give her credit for this, not to get off on the topic too much, but Joan Baez, you know, the
yes.
folk singer, did say in the late 70s that, you know, the anti-war movement had failed, not saying, you know, not talking about how bad it was in that part of the world when when we just decided to walk out and let them kill each other. But anyway, yes, Vietnam, terrible story. Bill,
yes.
I got to get into this story because this is one that is causing a lot of conversation here in Texas, maybe in the country as well. You wrote about this, and that's our Attorney General Paxton and our Secretary of State. In Texas, I guess the Secretary of State is responsible for this particular issue of votes, have come out with a story that 58,000 votes were cast illegally. Or they're not necessarily illegal immigrants, but they're people who are not citizens who should not have voted. It's a combination of, I guess, of green cards and illegal immigrants. And 58,000 have voted. And this has created, of course, the usual conversation. The left is saying that this is racism, you know, to bring this up. And the Attorney General is sticking to the story, and it's becoming a point of a lot of conversation here, because I remember during the campaign, the last campaign, I remember a Republican friend of mine talking about, you know, the Beto O'Rourke campaign, how they were just, I mean, they were basically just signing up anybody. All you had to do was show up, and they sign you up and register you. And he thought that you know, they were signing, registering a lot of illegal voters. So this could become a big issue here. And if it's 58,000 in Texas, Bill, I wonder what it is in California, where I think that there's probably a few more. So I don't know how much the country's talking about it, Bill, but we're talking a great deal about it here in Texas, Bill.
Well, it's a major subject. You know, we've been told that voter fraud is not a major problem. And, of course, we've been told it by people who are on the winning side. But the fact of the matter is, I recall, must have been about 7 or 8 years ago, there was a case in, I believe, Kansas City, where there were election districts in which more people voted than lived in the district. And yet, nobody was terribly interested. The immediate cry is racism, that if you do this, you're really talking about blacks or Hispanics or illegals who are now a new minority. And that you should be ashamed of yourself and you shouldn't do it. And you know what happens in these cases is that people then don't want to say anything. They really don't. We had a terrible case here just a month ago that was something right out of Soviet Russia, where there was changes made to the admission systems of some schools, and there were outrageous changes in the fact that they dropped all the basic requirements so that the schools could be more, quote, diverse. And parents who had worked hard to get their kids in on merit to those schools were outraged, and some of them were asked by a reporter, well, why didn't you say anything at the meetings when this was being brought up? And they said, we saw what happened in Manhattan. What happened in Manhattan, again, not pursued by the press, was that the mayor's office, the emissaries of a mayor who was a Marxist, who was a supporter of Castro and the Sandinistas, the mayor's office sent people into a town meeting who were instructed to jump up any time a parent objected to changes in the school system and yell racist. And they said, I don't want to be called a racist. This is frightening stuff. This is real McCarthyism, and yet
right.
It will not be covered.
No, and in this particular case, here in Texas, it's getting a lot of coverage, of course, because it is our Secretary of State. But, the argument is, well, it isn't really 58,000. That's not the right number. So I guess what is the right number? It doesn't really matter what the right number is. The right number could be 1,000, and it would still be wrong, because what these 58,000 voters have done is they've canceled the votes of legal citizens who are sitting there looking
That's
at
right.
all of this. Now,
That's right.
Now, 58,000 votes in a state like Texas is not going to decide the Senate race or the governor's race. It's not enough to do that. But there's a lot of state rep elections that are often decided by a couple hundred votes. There's a lot of city council elections decided sometimes by 100 votes. So when you start talking about illegal votes, this could have had an impact in some election results. And the one thing I will say for the Attorney General here, Paxton, is he's not going to hold back. He's going to go, they're going to process some people. I mean, they're very serious about fixing the problem here in
yes.
Texas. They're determined to fix it, Bill, and that's a good thing, Bill.
In California, they're not. They don't think there is.
That's the problem.
The California state government is really frightening. It's under the control of hard leftists. And that's happening here in New York, too, even though the governor of New York is not a hard leftist. He doesn't know what he is. I don't even know if he knows his last name. But he is determined to be as left-wing as possible because he really imagines that at the end the Democratic Party will turn to him as its presidential candidate next year. I mean, this man is he's living an illusion. He exists entirely on the reputation of his father, Mario Cuomo. It's you see this happening. Somebody made a comment a couple of days ago about negotiating with the left. Oh, I know where a comment came from. It came from one of my readers who sent me a letter, an email about this, and saying people ask why, whether Trump will negotiate with Nancy Pelosi now that the Democrats have control of the House. And the letter writer made the point, he said, you can never negotiate with the left. No matter what you agree on, they will then want more. And I've noticed this to be the case also, that the left changes the vocabulary of a country. An agreement is not an agreement. Night is day. Day is night. We don't care. Why? Because we're the good people, and we are fighting for righteousness. And therefore, we don't have to play by the normal rules. That is a frightening thing when that happens, because he who controls the vocabulary controls the country. And if the word agreement means nothing, if the word trust means nothing, you're going down the drain.
Well, look at abortion. Abortion is now about reproductive rights.
Yes.
I mean, and look at the way. I mean, abortion is now one of your reproductive rights.
Yeah.
I mean, where did that come from? That's pretty that's pretty incredible. But here in Texas, I think that they're going to pick this up and they're going to fight this issue. I know that Governor Abbott wants to fight it, so I think you'll hear more about this, and I'll try to send you some information when it becomes available. But I think Abbott wants to find it. I think Governor Abbott wants to find it. Well, let's talk a little bit about the Democrats' bill and the very real possibility. We talked about this a few weeks ago, where I said that I felt very strongly that there was going to be an independent candidate running for president on the Democrat side, and probably for different reasons. I think the reason I said a few weeks ago was that I think somebody like the fellow Bloomberg or somebody else will take a look at this crowd of Democrats and say, these people are crazy. I'm just going to go on my own. But now apparently there's a fellow named Schultz. I believe he was the CEO of Starbucks, if I'm correct.
He's the one who founded Starbucks, yeah.
Yeah, and it's interesting because his message is fascinating. He's not necessarily beating up President Trump. He's not, praising President Obama. He's basically saying both parties have failed. I'm paraphrasing him, but he's saying both parties have failed. And we're not talking about the biggest problem, which is the debt. He's not saying that climate change is the biggest problem. He's saying the debt. That's a platform that registers with me, Bill. I have to confess. I mean, that registers with me because I am concerned about the national debt and how we're going to pay for all of this and what it could do to the dollar and my kids' future and all of that. So this is a fellow, I think, who could click with enough serious Democrats. So you could have a phenomenon of Donald Trump being reelected with 45% of the vote and maybe winning 40 states because the Republicans or Democrats will divide most of the states, Bill.
Well, I'd like to see that. I'd like to see it. Schultz, I'm not that familiar with him. He strikes me as a serious man. Of course, as soon as he announces, and I think he's going to announce, I believe he was on 60 Minutes tonight, as he announces, all the jokes will start, the late-night comedians, because he's a coffee salesman. I mean, that's what he is. But if he is serious, if he's thoughtful, he might just have a chance of breaking through. Remember, what was Ross Perot? Ross Perot was a guy who ran a company, a data processing company. He was a terrible candidate. He never had any real answers to anything, and he got 20% of the vote. So you're quite right. I mean, if Schultz comes in, now the Democrats are frightened of him, and I have no doubt that what is going on behind the scenes and what will go on behind the scenes in the coming months will be extraordinarily vicious. I mean, they may make threats against him. They may say, you see what's happening to Trump? We'll do that to you. We'll investigate you to death, and we'll find something. And that, I wouldn't put it past them. The Democratic Party is extraordinarily vicious. It really is. This is not the party I grew up in, that's for sure. And that may happen. So I don't know how long he'll last. He can self-finance his campaign. He's a multi-billionaire. So can Bloomberg. But Bloomberg acts like a fool. I mean, he's the head of a big gun control group. And a couple of days ago, he comes out with a statement. He's a Johns Hopkins University graduate. And he said, it's really ridiculous that the Johns Hopkins Police Department is not armed. I mean, this is a guy who's head of a gun control group. And everybody picked up on it immediately. And they said, what hypocrisy. He's all for gun control except for the police at his college. But he does things like that. He was a very good mayor, by the way. He ran a good administration in New York. He's very dull, but he apparently still hasn't decided. And he really believes somehow that if he runs, he should run as a Democrat and that he has a chance of winning. He has no chance of winning. He's a white male, not only a white male, he's a white pro-Israel male. And in the Democratic Party, that isn't going to play right now. He should run as an independent. I would have no problem with a group of independents running. I think they could be terrific.
Mm-hmm. Well, that could happen. You could have, especially these guys who can finance their own campaigns. I think it's sort of amusing, though, Bill, to think of all the time, you know, the liberals have spent all this time talking about too much money in politics, and we may have a couple of liberals, actually more than one, who are actually financing their own campaigns for president. I just think that's kind of amusing. You know, after hearing about all the money into politics, remember President Obama, you know, attacking the Supreme Court in one of the State of the Union addresses, talking about all the money coming into politics. So who's got all the money? Who are going to be these candidates who are going to finance their own campaigns? Who else but a bunch of liberals, Bill? I think it's amusing.
Right, and if they can't finance their own campaigns, they'll go to the same people who financed Beto. In the Texas Senate race, who was financed at a ridiculous level, he still lost, and is now kind of making a fool of himself trying to get some placement in the 2020 presidential race. I think he's already wearing out his welcome.
Did you see the article where he's apparently touring the country?
Yes,
he decided that he's going to learn, which I think tells me a great deal about Beto, how you know, I don't even know what the word is, but it tells me a lot that a man says, I'm going to drive around the country and see if see if I can find out if I should run for president. I mean, that's silly, Bill. I mean, it's just totally silly.
They all make some kind of an announcement. I'm forming an exploratory committee. I'm going to go around the country. I'm going to talk to my mother if you want to run for president, run for president. Say, I think I've got the stuff, I think I can be a good president, and here is my platform. What is remarkable about so many of these people on the Democratic side who want to run for president is that their entire platform consists of hatred of Trump, Medicare for all, and free college. And that's it. That's the whole platform.
And, Bill, when you look at these people, what accomplishments do they have? That's the other thing, too. I mean, you can criticize President Trump, but President Trump had built a business. You know, he was a successful businessman. You can hate the guy. I know his personal life was a little crazy, but the guy had a lot of accomplishments as a businessman. What accomplishments does Beto have? Or, for that matter, Kamala Harris, has she ever run anything? Elizabeth Warren, has she ever run anything? At least Biden
Kamala
was vice president for 8 years.
Yes, Kamala Harris... as you know, has been in the news today. She was Attorney General of California.
Yes.
She's now in the U.S. Senate, making absolutely no record. As we talked about before we went on the air, she has now is now the subject of a lot of gossip because Willie Brown, one of the most powerful Democrats in California, an African American, former mayor of San Francisco, wrote a column over the weekend, obviously timed to coincide with her announcement for the White House, that he had an affair with her some years ago, which was not a revelation. Everyone knew about it. And that he got her certain jobs while having this affair. Mm-hmm. Now, the response has been devastating in a way because what was he really saying? He's saying, I got her to where she got through a romantic relationship. That's a pretty ugly thing to say about a woman. As one columnist came right out and said it. In other words, she slept her way to the top. And that is the kind of language that we really, unless you can prove it, I mean, I'm no Kamala Harris fan, obviously, but I think that this is where we are in politics in America. But it's going to be used against her. Now, it's a particularly delicate situation because you have a charge by a man against a woman, which is rare, that she slept, in effect, slept her way to the top, and both are people of color. So you're getting into a very, very ugly fix here because she is a front runner. She's quite popular among some Democrats, but in some way this will be used to bring her down. In some way.
I think so. I actually also think that she doesn't, I mean, her positions are fairly predictable. And I think what the Democrats really need is somebody who can say something more than Medicare for all. I really think they need somebody who can go beyond that. And I don't see, frankly, anybody on the bench who talks like that. They're all basically copies of each other.
Yeah.
I would love to see what the debate's going to be like, because they're all going to agree that they hate Trump, and that's about the extent of it. Bill, looking at next week, I wanted to get into a little bit of this with Secretary Pompeo, who continues to just absolutely impress the heck out of me. He's now taking a position with Venezuela, which I completely support, but that could be a huge story. Keep your eye on Venezuela, because that could pop at any moment. Maduro has lost the country, has lost the people, and he may very well soon lose his password to take the money out of the central bank, because he's no longer recognized as the president of the country. But I think that's a huge story and could be a real success story for the Trump administration if the media was ever interested in talking about anything other than, you know, Mueller-ville.
Well, yes. We are going to have a year or 2 years of the most interesting and vicious politics we've ever seen in American life, and it's coming up. I hope everyone survives. I hope there is not a horrible incident. But all these issues that we're talking about and the other issues that can come up are grist for the mill. But, you know, we ought to put one caveat into our discussion. We don't yet know whether President Trump is going to run for re-election. He has all the mechanism in place, which is the right thing to do, but I would not be completely shocked if he got out of it.
Well, that's what a lot of people are speculating. In fact, this comedian, Dennis Miller, put a Twitter over the weekend about something that he said that President Trump's statement about the board on Sunday, or I mean on Friday, opening the government, reminded him of Lyndon Johnson's 1968 announcement that he would not accept the nomination of his party. I don't know if that's, you know, if that's a fair comparison, but a lot of people are talking about President Trump not running for a second term. I'm beginning to hear that more and more in social conversation. I think, you know, what I'm hearing is that people are saying that Trump may very well just be exhausted by this. That public life is not as much fun as running your own business, Bill. Again, that's just speculation on my part, but I agree with you. I wouldn't be surprised if he drops out, and then of course all bets are off and God only knows who we would nominate in 2020. I'm assuming it would be Pence, but who knows? It could be more exciting than that. I mean, I think we'd do a lot worse than Pence. I mean, I think Pence would really be a strong candidate.
Pence would be treated the same way Trump was treated, because he's pro-life and he's a religious man. There is talk, as you know, and it's very interesting speculation, that Pompeo will leave the State Department to run for the Senate from Kansas. Because they want to keep that seat, and then one begins to speculate on who would take the place of him at the State Department, and two names immediately come to mind. One, the obvious one, is Nikki Haley, and the other one is Rick Grenell, who is our ambassador to Germany and is a superman of diplomacy. He's also gay. Now, wouldn't it be interesting if the Republican Party had a woman of color on their ticket or a gay man on their ticket? It could shake. Now, although, you know, the rule of thumb in politics is that nobody votes for the vice president, but you don't know what's going to happen next year. The Democratic Party has so many candidates running for president, just sorting them out. You know, I don't know if I mentioned this on the program last week, but my suggestion, I'm going to write them a letter saying, why have a convention with all these candidates? Why not have a pageant and bring in the Miss America people? I mean, you could have Bernie Sanders in a bikini. I mean, you could have Alexandria Cortez, whatever the hell her name is, from the Bronx, singing "There She Is," our next president. I mean, that race is going to make the 2016 Republican race look organized when there were 17.
That's right. Well, at least in 2016, you had serious people running.
That's,
I mean,
right.
The Republican group. It was too many. I agree with you, and I
yes.
think that it got crazy at times, but it was a bunch of very serious people who were running.
Yes.
I mean that there was a lot of successful governors who were running. I mean, Scott Walker, Jeb Bush, those were successful people, serious people, but that's not what I see on the Democrat side. Well, Bill, as always, thank you for your time. Have a wonderful week, and we'll keep up with what you're writing about the world over at Urgent Agenda, but I think that Venezuela is going to be a big story this week. I just feel that way, Bill.
Yeah, yes, it's going to be, and this is a remarkable thing that's happened, and we should talk about it next week, that a group of nations
sure.
got together and, in effect, said, we do not recognize the current government, but here is
yes.
the person we do recognize. Don't recall
right.
that ever happening before.
No, and there's a technicality. A friend from Venezuela was explaining this to me, that Chavez, when he wrote the Constitution, he said that if there was no official president, that the Speaker of the House, the equivalent to the Speaker of the House, would become the president. And that's exactly what's happening in Venezuela. So the Speaker of the House, the young man who's now the president, or at least the temporary president, he is this is a completely constitutional under the Constitution that Chavez wrote. So. But I'm very glad to see Brazil, Colombia, Chile, Argentina, and all these countries who are siding with the new president. All of them are also right center presidents who have been elected in South America here over the last year. So that's a little bit of good news in itself, Bill.
I think so. So well, we'll talk next week, and I think we'll have a lot to talk about.
I think so. As always, thank you for your time. It's always a lot of fun to chat with you.
Absolutely. Talk to you next week, Sylvia.
Thank you very much. Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. What a week. I mean, what a week, and what another week I'm sure we're going to have coming up over the next week or so. So much going on. I think Venezuela is going to be a big story, like I was talking to Bill. And I think this story from Texas about the illegal vote, I just think that's going to take off into a very national story. One last thing I wanted to mention. Today is the anniversary of the creation of the National Geographic Society. So if that rings a bell, or if you remember, like I do, growing up with adults who were fans of the National Geographic Society, or the magazine, I should say, I hope you remember that. Good night, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.